Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the podcast for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. Hello, my name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. So we're 8 episodes into the show, and I hope you've been able to listen to the earlier episodes that we've got. So 1 to 7 available on iTunes and also on our website, engagingic.com. Next week, we've got a great interview coming up with Ryan Tamasebi, who's from an organization called Hive, who will be telling us all about how we can use data to drive employee engagement. So really interesting conversation that I had with Ryan, and I'm looking forward to playing that to you and letting you hear that one. If you've not already been across our website, please do so. Please sign up to our mailing list. Also, please give us some feedback on the show. Really, really, really keen to find out what you're thinking about it. Is it hitting the right buttons for you? Is there anything we need to be doing differently? Any different topics that you'd like to be hearing about that are hot on your agenda at the moment? Really like to make the show as relevant as possible. And on that note, we do have a link, a community on Facebook, where you can join our private group. You can do that via our website as well, engagingic.com. We also have a Facebook page where we are posting snippets from upcoming interviews that will be playing in the following weeks. Anyway, so hopefully we can hear back from you, get some engagement from you, and find out how you're finding things. So anyway, on to today's interview. One of the areas I've been looking to explore for a while now is the whole area of measuring internal communications, which is something that everybody in the internal communications and employee engagement space is really keen to do. It's something that's been pressed and pushed for a while now in terms of being able to prove value added and return on investment. So in today's conversation, we're going to be looking at the whole idea of, can you measure employee engagement and internal communications, and particularly internal communications, but also what are some of the myths associated with that attempt to measure it, and what are some of the things we need to be watching out for. So I think this is going to be a really interesting interview for those of you who are working in internal comms, but also in employee engagement as well, who are being pushed to deliver that return on investment that is expected from our organizations, and how we can be mindful of some of the pitfalls of going down that route. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, so today I'm going to be talking to Sarah Carr, who I met at the IOIC conference in Manchester in 2019. Sarah is an experienced internal communicator. She's worked for Aviva for the last 18 years, and Aviva is a savings, retirement and insurance business. I'll ask Sarah to tell us a little bit about Aviva in a moment. Sarah describes herself as someone with a passion for data and measurement and finding the nuggets that really help understand the people we're communicating to and how best to reach them. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, the idea of measurement and also some of the myths around measurement. During her time with Aviva, Sarah's worked in HR, which she describes as the dark side, and we're going to be talking about that in a moment, and in global internal communications. And now for the last 3 years, Sarah has been Global Communications Insights Lead. So hello, Sarah, how are you?
I'm great, thanks, Craig. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, thank you for agreeing. It's lovely to speak to you. And I think you're based in York, aren't you, or round about the York area?
I am. Yeah. Sunny York.
Yeah, not New York, but Old York.
That's right.
Yeah, and I prefer the Old York to the New York, if I'm perfectly honest. So, Global Comms Insight Lead. Tell me what does that entail? What's that job actually involve, Sarah? Just for our listeners, please.
It sounds really fancy, doesn't it? So for anyone who's not familiar with Aviva, as Craig said, we're an insurance company. We've got an investments arm. And at the moment, we have around 30,000 people based in different parts of the world, offering insurance and protection and investment products to people. So that's quite a challenge in terms of how you understand who all those people are, what they all need to know, and where my role comes into it is, how do we know whether we're doing that effectively And what can we find out about those people that helps us communicate to them even better? It's that kind of group head office, I guess, in old world terminology, a role that links in with the comms teams that we have in each of the different markets to help them bring insight to them from things like our annual employee listening survey, but also helps work with them to understand how are people interacting with the messages that they're communicating, what can we learn from that, what are the ways that we can do things differently using our channels, what sort of content is most important right now. So it's a great role for someone who is as kind of curious and nosy as I am.
So 30,000 people is a huge organization. Yeah. You've got local comms managers working in their business units, in their markets.
Yes.
And they're, I guess, normally reporting into you or the dotted line?
They're in the local markets, the comms leads would report up with kind of one foot in their home business and one foot through into the people function, which includes the comms team. They have two hats on, you know, thinking about how they can help drive that business forward through the communications that they're doing.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you've got that kind of strategic overview of what's going on in all the different markets and the business units and really helping kind of make sure there's some consistency, but also I guess like sharing best practice, that sort of thing around the business as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So the comms leads in the different markets are all absolutely brilliant. And, you know, they come to it with different perspectives based on kind of the challenges in their business areas at the moment. There's cultural nuance. There's all kinds of things that because they're there and part of it, they, you know, are absolutely best placed to be right in amongst all of that. And I guess what I can bring to the party to help them is data that helps them see what's happening because of all their kind of blood, sweat and tears that they're putting into it, and how does that compare to what's happening in that market over there, and then, you know, helping look for those opportunities where we can join things up and do it once, or we can learn from each other and do things differently.
So I know measurement, you self acclaimed love of data and measurement, and that was what you were talking about when I first met you. So, and you talked about the seven myths of measuring internal comms, which I think is really interesting. Just before we dive into that though, so measurement, what is it for you that's so critical about? And I guess, you know, I guess many of the people involved in internal comms will know that measurement is one of those sort of things that everybody is trying to strive to be able to sort of prove that return on investment. But what was it for you that really captured your attention when it came to measurement? Was it a particular experience that you had, or just a combination of experiences in your internal comms career?
Ooh, good question. I think I grew up in a family where both my parents had a small business that they ran between them. So they would often talk about work-related things in the house, and you kind of pick up on that stuff. And before I joined Aviva, I'd only ever worked for small organisations. And in a business where there's 5 people or 10 people, you have to be really confident before you spend money on something. Mm. You know, you have to know that the thing that you're doing is going to benefit your business, because otherwise, you know, it could make the difference between your business not being there tomorrow. Mm. And I think it's that kind of commercial mentality that's always made me question, what are we doing? How do we know it's the right thing? How will we know if it worked or not? And that, I think, is kind of the underlying reason as to why I can't be okay with somebody saying, let's do this thing, we'll spend this money on this project, the end. Like, but why? I need to understand, you know, what is the benefit that we anticipate because of that? And how do we know that that's the right thing? And how will we know we've achieved that benefit or not?
I think that's really important. And when in any any what how you'd maybe describe it, you know, non-fee earning role, if you're in a part of the business where there isn't that, you know, direct correlation, always that really clear direct correlation between what you do and the bottom line. And I used to work for Pepsi. That was my last kind of corporate job, and my job was similar to yours. I was, you know, working with it was more in an L&D perspective, but working with learning and development people in the business units, kind of coordinating their work. And I always used to think, how many cans of Pepsi have need to be sold today for me to pay for my wages to do what I'm doing? And I'm not actually selling anything or making anything. And I always had that. And I think that, you know, again, I've got my own business. It's a useful thing to, you know, not to be questioning of your value, but to questioning the value you're adding and being really mindful of that, I think is a really good quality to have. And particularly in a big corporate, because it's very easy to just sort of, you know, get lost in that sea of you know, overheads, isn't it? And to
yes.
just think, well, there's loads of others, so why not me? But okay, so let's get into the nitty gritty then. So these seven myths that you talked about and we probably haven't got time to go through all of them. But
I just pick my favorite.
Yeah, well, that's probably and it might be worth just going through, you know, bullet pointing, and we'll put them into the show notes so people can who want to read them and can't remember them. But do you want to just quickly whiz? Have you got them to hand, or can you
remember?
Yeah, Fabi, if you want to just whiz through them and then maybe pick one or two that really, you know, for you are the most sort of, well, not I think they're all significant, but the one that maybe you know you've got the most stories around. So over to you, the seven myths.
Okay. So the seven myths came about because I volunteered to speak at an IOIC get together, and I was trying to think about, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? Communicating to a room of communicators. There's a bit of pressure in that. So, but actually, in kind of that prep and thinking it through and deciding to talk about it as myths, it did make me realise that I think there are some myths that really do prevail in kind of comms conversations when I get to internal comms get-togethers. So, yes, hopefully they're helpful.
I'm sure they definitely are.
So the first myth that I like to talk about is that the people on the stage have all the answers, or in this case, that the people on the podcast have all the answers. because, you know, the bottom line for me is that there's always more you can learn. Mm. So there's a brilliant quote from Doug McMillon at Walmart, who's the CEO there for a while. He said, "Almost everything I've ever done has been copied from someone else." Mm. And that, I think, absolutely refreshing honesty really sums up for me what I think, what is kind of an ethos about life, but particularly about, you know, the way that we go about doing things in comms and the way that we can go about measuring them. Because if we're curious, and people listening to this podcast would fall into that bracket because they're you know, listening to it for the purposes of finding out something new. Not believing that you have to think up the solution and invent everything yourself, and instead just being interested and open and collecting up wisdom, I think is the best approach.
Yeah. And I took from that as well is that there's also you can always learn more, you know, and I think we put people on a stage and on a pedestal and sometimes think, right, you know, they have all the answers and they're all the knowledge, but it's not always the case. And we sometimes fall into the trap of being seen as the font of all knowledge when actually we're
Do you mean
there.
You're not the font of all knowledge, Craig?
I'm certainly not, no. No. I'm definitely a curator of other people's knowledge. That's why I interview people like you. Anyway, so that's the first one. People on the stage that have all the answers. What's the second of the seven myths?
So myth number two is that the best comms are epic and award-winning. Mm. And I don't have an issue with awards. They're lovely. Mm. I've been to some award ceremonies. I really enjoyed them. But I guess this boils down to what I was saying before about what are you doing, why are you doing it, how do you know it's going to work? Sometimes the best way to achieve your outcome is really ordinary and you've done it 100 times before, and it might just be that an email out to all employees and some posters on the toilet door is the thing that does the trick. So I guess it's that reminder to myself and everybody in comms roles that there are lots of exciting things out there, but when you find yourself looking for an opportunity to use the exciting thing, it's probably the wrong way around. So you could use augmented reality to communicate anything you wanted, but really we should be starting from the outcome that we're trying to achieve and then working back through, you know, what is the best way to achieve that outcome for that audience. And it might be augmented reality, but let's not start with that.
I think I'm going to be interviewing a guy in a few weeks who's written a book around this, and it's really interesting, which is, you know, particularly now in this day and age, there's so many short, lots of messages being bombarded with communication all the time. And what he's talking about is how you cut through that and with something that's really simple. And it reminded me of when we used to communicate with people in the factories. I used to work at the PepsiCo. One of the most effective ways we found was just a little like menu stand on the canteen tables, and they would read that, because at that time they're usually eating on their own, they didn't have anyone else to talk to, they're always looking for something to read. They would even read the, you know, the little adverts, the leaflets that fell out of the free newspapers that people left on the table. They would sit and read anything, and for us it was just an obvious place to put messages that we wanted them to pick up, and you know, you wouldn't probably win an award for that, but it was just effective and it worked and it cut through the noise and it got the messages into their heads. So absolutely, I think simplicity is sometimes, you know, effectiveness is not always is seen as being, you know, glamorous, but it can be effective and not award-winning. So best comms aren't always award-winning. What's our third myth?
The third myth is that you should always trust your gut instinct. Which is a really interesting one, because I am quite instinctive, I think, in the way that I approach things. But previous to my life in comms and Aviva, I studied psychology, and the concept of confirmation bias is just, I think, so super relevant. So it's the super short version is that at any one point in time, your brain is receiving up to 11 million pieces of data. And obviously you can't consciously think about 11 million pieces of data all at once. So your brain just uses all of your collective experience and wisdom to kind of filter through and only deliver certain things into your conscious based on what it thinks are important to keep you alive, keep you safe. So I guess the short version is there's an awful lot of stuff that's happening that you're seeing, that you're hearing, that you're experiencing, that you're not consciously aware of. And I think that translates for me into comms and the work that we do, because you can set out to find a positive outcome, or you can set out to find a negative outcome, or you can set out to be really neutral and see what you find. And it's that trying to always bring yourself back to that middle point of being really careful how you phrase your questions, looking for the opposite of what you believe to be true, just to test whether there is an alternate reality that your brain hasn't let you see yet before you're confident that you've reached a conclusion.
And that because that's an interesting one, because of gut instinct, you could say sometimes is, you know, what you were saying earlier around measuring comms and measuring output of comms, is that some people do make those decisions on based on gut instinct, don't they? Well, they'll kind of go, oh, it just feels right, you know, there's that, it appeals to my reptilian brain, and I can't articulate which bit of it but I can't communicate that because it's so primitive. So I it's interesting to compare that with, yeah, but that's not, you know, we need to be able to give it a little bit more substance than just it just feels right. But it is interesting. And your idea of investigating the opposite, I guess, is that provocation to say, well, yes, your gut instinct's great, but always just think, what's the flip side, and could that be better? And is there a confirmation bias there? That's.
So, and it's fun to do as well, you know. It's a difficult thing often to measure your own comms, because you have obviously made all the decisions along the way. And therefore, of course, you believe you've done the right thing. Otherwise, you wouldn't have done it, because none of us are in this business to just, you know, make stuff up and see what happens away. So setting out to kind of investigate the opposite outcome, it can be quite liberating in a way. And in fact, the opposite is an interesting way I find if you're doing a comms plan. If you're doing a comms plan and you're a bit stuck, like how do I achieve this outcome? If you try and make an opposite comms plan of like how you could absolutely make sure that your outcome never happened.
Yeah, you can reverse.
You can sometimes throw up some interesting stuff.
Yeah, I've used that when I've been working with people with, you know, on sort of brain, you know, idea generation sort of thing. And when they've run out of ideas how to make it better. Then how could you make it worse? And that just throws up a whole new plethora of different ways of looking at it. And actually, how can you make it worse? And then reverse that again gives you a very different route to a different answer than just trying to make it better all the time. So I like that as an approach. Right, so we've got people are on the stage of all the answers, number one. We've got best comms are always award-winning. We've got three, always trust your gut instinct and investigate the opposite. What's number four?
So number four is that you need lots of time and fancy tech to do good measurement.
Controversial. I can hear people slamming their iPods or phones to the ground. How dare? So come on, tell us what that means.
So... yes, it's brilliant to have lots of time. And I absolutely recognise that, you know, my role is all about the kind of the measurement, the insight and putting that to work. And if you're in a role where you're a one-man band for comms or you're a smaller team, you don't have the luxury of having somebody, you know, with time to pore over data and insight, it is more difficult. But you can absolutely do some amazing measurement in really simple ways. So I always think back to Innocent Smoothies and the story of how they came to be. So the people behind Innocent Smoothies decided to make some smoothies, and the way that they tested whether this was a good idea or not was just had two bins next to the stall that they were selling it at, and as they sold their smoothies they asked people, do you think we should ditch our jobs and do this for a living? When you finished your drink, either put your empty in the yes bin or the no bin. So it can be that simple, you know.
Yeah, I agree, it's worth
spending the time thinking about what you're going to measure and how you could do it, and just making it as easy as possible for yourself to get to an answer.
Yeah, I think there's something quite visceral and you know, cuts, again, it's another thing that cuts through the noise. If you, it's great to have, you know, really great apps and I'm a massive fan of tech, as you know you are as well. I know you say, but sometimes just having something very visual and visceral, you know, we used to do it again back in my Pepsi days with we used to have like a charity thing in the reception area, and people would, a bit like they're doing kind of John Lewis or Waitrose, where you put your little coin in the charity that you want to give your little charity donation to. It's very visible, and you could see what people were passionate about, and everybody could see where their contribution was in that. And that, I think sometimes that visibility and simplicity can be much more effective than something that's high tech and more complex. So,
absolutely.
We're on to number five. Sorry, go on. Yeah, go on.
It's all right. I was just going to say, one of my favourite ways to test something, particularly if it's, you know, something like financial results announcement days, if it's a day where everybody should have found out about something. This is obviously in the olden days when we used to work in an office, Craig, instead of in the room at home. One of my favourite ways to kind of test how we've got on with getting those messages out is just to go and, like, when you go and buy yourself a coffee, in the coffee queue, try and ask 10 people, like 10 strangers. They often look at you a little bit strangely, but when you explain who you are, most people are happy to answer. And if you just say, you know, I just wondered, have you heard about this?
Yeah.
What did you hear? What do you make of it?
Yeah.
And then by the time you get back to your desk, you've got a coffee and you've got a really good sense of, you know, a random slice of the organization and how they feel about what's happened or what they've heard.
Absolutely. No, I'm, again, we used to ask questions around, you know, how do you, it used to be a question we'd ask in our annual, it wasn't in a survey, it was more in a kind of a focus group thing that we used to do. Just, how do you find, what's the best way to, what is the way that you find out about what's going on in the organization or the factory?
Yeah.
And that would tell us so much more than, you know, that simple question would give us our, there's the root conduits we need to use, because that's obviously how people find out stuff. And if it's the grapevine, then how do we influence the grapevine? How do we get messages into the grapevine that you know, how do we facilitate that? So anyway, we're on to number five.
Number five is a good one. So the myth is that you should always measure everything.
Ooh, and that's from a self-claimed data and measurement lover.
Nerd.
So, nerd, yeah. So tell us what that means.
So this is something I kind of learned the hard way. So I absolutely set out to measure absolutely everything and had line graphs on line graphs and charts and bars and then had a kind of moment of realization where rewinding back to the what am I doing, why am I doing it, what will be different because of this. If every time you measure something it gives you the same answer, you're probably wasting your time measuring it. You could probably do that much less frequently. So I think the kind of the golden rule for me is just don't measure what you already know.
Yeah.
So if, for example, you know that stories about customers, emotive stories told in the first person way, always get good reads, get good responses, increase connection. We don't need to keep measuring that every month. We might just, you know, keep a check on it. So if we see any funny numbers coming up or if from time to time something feels like it might be different, let's pop in and measure it again. But don't waste your time because you can spend that time being curious about something else.
Yeah. I think it's a case of asking yourself the question, if we're going to measure it, and what are we going to do with the results? And is it going to be any different to what we're doing now? And if it isn't, then why measure it in the first place? It's like you say, sometimes it's that kind of reassurance or that, well, at least we're measuring it, even though we've got no intention of doing anything about whatever we get back or not. We haven't, more often than not, it's not the intention, it's just we haven't got the resources or the bandwidth to be able to do anything about it. So,
that's it, that kind of time machine. You know, imagine you've now completely delivered your piece of work, you've got all those numbers in your hand, what are you going to do with them? And if you're not confident what use they're going to be to you, they might not be the right measures.
Okay, number six, we've got our penultimate of the seven myths.
So number six is it's all about demonstrating return on investment.
Okay.
So this is, I often hear my fellow communicators talking about how do you demonstrate return on investment. And I think it's a really interesting one. And a lot of this, I think, depends on the role that comms plays within the organization that you work in. So there's always a lot of talk in comms about like the fabled seat at the table. And I think that it's easy for me to say, don't go too deep on return on investment because we are, you know, seen highly at Aviva. We've got, we're in a lot of those conversations that help shape the organization. We don't feel that we need to be kind of defending our territory and making sure that people understand the importance of comms, because they absolutely do. But I think it's something that drives a lot of people in other organizations that I've spoken to in the past. They measure because they want to be able to say, look what we've done, look at all the work we've put in, look how important we are, you know, pay attention here. And I think a different conversation which can help in a much better way is to sort of put that to one side and instead, in those conversations with senior leaders, rather than be bringing them the dashboard that you believe is the kind of return on investment measure for your work and the work of your department, it's if you can get into a conversation with them instead about how you can really help them achieve their business goals, that is way more valuable to the organization. It's actually much more valuable to them because you could use an equivalent amount of time that you would have spent talking them through a dashboard which shows how many people have read, watched, done things, and therefore, you know, pay attention, this is important, to being future focused about, you know, what is the stuff that we absolutely have to smash as an organization, and how can all of our specialist skills, experience, knowledge and abilities help you to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree. I think it's as you say, I think, you know, this idea of a place at the table, it's really, mm-hmm. it's about having the business acumen to know what, and it's like, it's, I guess it, the parallel would say, I would say, is for us as an external business who, you know, gets brought in to help organizations or to work with organizations. It's one of the key things that we ask is, you know, how are we going to measure success? Not just from a kind of, you know, likes and shares, that sort of way, but actually what business results is this going to drive for you, and what's keeping you awake at night, that the, you know, I only ask three questions. So why this, why now, and why us? And if you, you know, and so why do you want to address this issue? Why do you want to do it now? And why have you asked us to come and talk to you about it? And through those three questions, you can usually get some really good idea of how they're in their head is that their measures of success, and again it's not from a kind of a very simplistic measure, it's actually from understanding what's going to help their business and them to get through whatever it is that you're going to be working with them on.
Right. I'm adding that to my collected wisdom.
Thank you. That's nice to. I'm sort of tapping into all of yours. It's nice to give some back. So, right, last one then. So, we're number seven.
Okay, number seven.
Myth.
So this is that comms is all about the fluffy, soft stuff.
Mm.
So all those things that drive us mad, like, oh, it's just. Can you just put this into like a pretty template, or, you know, can you take this message and put a bow on it and tell everybody about the cake sale tomorrow? So frustrating, isn't it? Because we could do any of those things, but we've absolutely got the power to kind of make or break the organisations that we work in.
Mm.
What you will find, I think, in any organisation where you've got good comms people is that those people will know every corner of the business and see all the kind of connections. They'll be able to tell you, you know, what's working where, which parts of the organization, you know, need more or less from their leaders. And it's incredibly frustrating when comms gets put into that bracket of, it's like marketing, but internal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a kind of an abdication of. I think sometimes that can be happened, can't it? And I remember this from my corporate days. Is, you know, bring you people in just to wave your magic wand, and you kind of do this stuff to those people, so and sort them out, so we can then carry on doing what. And then it's that lack of ownership sometimes, isn't it? That you need them to be recognize that actually they're part of the solution as well. The people who've brought you in, the leadership teams, they've got to actually walk the talk on a lot of this stuff. You can't just do what you do in isolation.
Yeah,
I think that's a really important point. But I think actually, I mean, we're recording this sort of summer 2020, and we've not managed to get through the whole thing without really talking about it. But, you know, I think the fact is that over the last sort of 10 to 12 weeks through the pandemic, I think a lot of organizations have realized that it's actually a business critical function, keeping people in the loop. And I just hope that continues when whatever normal looks like does return, or whatever it's going to look like over the next 6 months, that we continue to value that part of it.
And we spent some time earlier in the year sort of breaking down, so before any of this happened, just breaking down, you know, what are the big things that we want to go after, and really boiling that down into, you know, what is the business impact of doing that. So one example would be, you know, we were thinking about our organization's purpose. So why is it important that we help people understand what our purpose is and connect to it? And we concluded that connection is what leads to, discretionary effort. So if people really believe that the work that they do for the organisation that they do it is important and makes a difference and, you know, plays an important role either, you know, in societally or just in the lives of the people that they're doing that work for, they're much more likely to, you know, hang on for the extra half hour at the end of the day to resolve an issue, or, you know, push through those kind of weird bureaucracy blockagey type, don't know how to get this done barriers, to get to those happy customers at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And if you've got happy customers, then they're going to stay longer, they're going to buy more, and that is where your business grows and succeeds. So it's finding, I think, those really clear routes through what we're doing and what is the end goal of that for the organization and the people that we serve.
Yeah.
That helps you stop being blown off course. And not let your precious time be absorbed into things that actually aren't going to help you achieve those outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the Dan Pink stuff. I don't know if you've come across that, but autonomy, mastery and purpose are the things that he says to drive engagement. I want to be able to have some direction over what I do. I want to feel that I'm the best I can be at doing my job, but I also want to have a sense of purpose that what I do actually matters. And I think if you get those three things right, it really helps, build that engagement, and it takes it out of this sort of soft and fluffiness. Well, we said we were going to talk about, go back to the ones, but I think we've actually covered them all. I think we've had a good deep dive into all seven there. So
I just can't resist it, Craig. I just get all excited.
No, that's fine. No, I think that's good. I think I'm pleased that we didn't just sort of dance through all of them and then pick one or two. I think we all of them are kind of equally important, I think. So just to sort of maybe bring things to a conclusion, you've had a really long, successful career at Aviva, and as you probably know, in our profession, in many professions at the minute, having that kind of loyalty with one organization and building a career with and not moving around loads of different organizations is maybe more unusual than it used to be a few years ago. So what is it about Aviva, and what is it, how you've learned and grown with that same organization, that anyone else who's looking to build a long-term career, you know, with an organization, or looking to build an organization that has people who want to stay with it? What, any tips there in terms of your own personal experience and why Aviva has been a special part of your career for you?
Ooh, well, I think one of the great things about Aviva, you know, undeniably the people. So I've worked with and for some amazing people, and that I'm a great believer in, you know, doing what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. And if you are surrounded by people that you feel you can learn from, and that you genuinely enjoy working with, personally, there might be a job that's fantastic and pays twice as much money elsewhere, but I think that's quite a lot to give up. So there is something for me in the kind of just the pure hedonistic, just doing what makes you happy.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Also, I think that, you know, one of the benefits of large organizations is the variety of roles that are available. So although I've been at Aviva for such a long time, I've not really done the same job for more than a kind of 2-year period. And even then, the changes and the evolution to those roles has meant that it feels fresh and new. So being able to kind of move around different areas, learn new things, find, you know, turn over new stones and see what's underneath, is brilliant. There's plenty enough to keep my interest, and some fantastic people and some leaders that I aspire to be like and learn from. So it's a great place for me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things you said right at the beginning was that questioning and always being mindful of, you know, the value that you add, I think, is really important as well. I think, you know, I think that's what from my experience of working with, you know, I've worked in organizations where, you know, there's been a kind of mix of people, and it's the people who've been there and are really adding massive amounts of value and that really using their experience, who have that kind of humility to recognize that just because they've been there for a long time or been there for a while doesn't mean then, you know, it goes back to one of your points, is they don't know everything and they're always learning, and that totally. Willingness to learn and that humility, I think, is a really important quality. So bringing things to a close. Now, normally I ask people to share something that I didn't know about them, or maybe other people don't know that. And you already divulged something to me, but I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about it, because you described yourself as a geek, but then a geek with a particular interest in a particular area. So, Sarah, tell us all about what is your particular geeky interest, your interest in a particular thing that I think people will be interested to know about you anyway.
Well, people who've met me wouldn't be too surprised to know this, but I am a geek, and I do have an awful lot of tattoos.
Fantastic.
I think it's still quite unusual in sort of big corporate land to be reasonably heavily tattooed. And yeah, fascinating, some of the comments from, you know, family members, like, you know, oh, do you need to put that on your CV? Will you have to wear kind of long sleeve t-shirts in the office? And I think it's just something that, for me, tattoos are just art. They're beautiful pictures that I like to look at and that make me happy and that I'm really happy to have on me. So yeah, it fascinates me that different people's opinions to what that might do for your career.
And as I said, told you, before we started recording, my brother's a tattooist, so I'm very open-minded about tattoos. And my daughter's just had, she's just 18, and she's had a couple done recently. And I think that they're amazing. She designed them herself. She's an artist. Well, she's studying art, A-level art, and she designed them and had them, you know, met somebody who she wanted to do them and briefed him and found out there was a meeting of minds. And what he's done is amazing, and what she designed was amazing. So I think I completely. So what is your without being asking too personal a question, what's your favorite tattoo? Have you got any tattoo that you're particularly proud of, or if so, what is it? And if it's not too forward to ask where it is,
no, it's fine. Interesting what you mentioned about your daughter. So I absolutely believe that. Because there are, you should look for artists that you like.
Yeah.
So whatever you've got in your head, find the person who does work like that.
Yeah.
And I love all things kind of Art Nouveau. I love the flow and nature. And there's a Kingfisher tattoo that I've got, which just sort of, I found someone whose work I loved. I said to him, I'd really love a Kingfisher in a sort of an Art Nouveau style.
Yeah.
And then I rocked up at his studio without having spoken to him. So all that was done by email.
Yeah.
And the drawing he showed me was just like perfect, better than I could have sketched or imagined. And that just really made me think that's the way to do it. You know, find someone who's art you love and it will be beautiful. So yeah, my Kingfisher is my favourite by far.
Fantastic. Well, that's brilliant. No, that's lovely. I think that's a really nice way to bring things to a close. A really unique and distinctive way, which I think you've kind of embodied in everything that you've talked about today, Sarah. So, if people want to connect with you, reach out to you, tap into this wisdom further, I guess LinkedIn is that probably the easiest way for people to get in touch with you. If we put a link into you, a link in the show notes to your LinkedIn profile, you're happy for people to say hello and Alice heard you on the podcast and love to know a little bit more about this. Fantastic.
Always up for swapping ideas and knowledge.
Brilliant. And do you send any other social media? Are you a Twitterer or are you anywhere, any other, but is that more for personal stuff if you do rather than professional?
I'm not good at Twitter. I quite like to kind of curate my own happy little place on social media, and I don't find Twitter's very conducive to that. So LinkedIn is the best one for
Me. Way to reach out to you. Lovely. And I can see you looking at your profile and you do interact, and I can see you engage and share a lot of stuff on, so that sounds like a good way to get in touch. Well, look, Sarah, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. It was an absolute delight listening to your stories and your wisdom there, and I think we've had a really good conversation. I wish you all the best, obviously in this sort of post-pandemic and final ends of the pandemic and whatever we come out of the pandemic, but also going forward in the future with your career. And I hope everything Aviva is good and your people are all safe and well, and that business returns to some sense of normality as quickly as possible for you.
Oh, thanks so much, Craig. It's been really brilliant. I've loved talking to you. You've been very kind.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Sarah, and take care.
Thanks.
So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and any questions, ideas or feedback that you'd have, anything you'd like us to cover on future episodes too, please. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up to our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show and anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it directly via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review, and also if you could leave some verbal feedback there as well, not just stars. That's always nice to know that we've been appreciated, and particularly how we've helped you. If you know anyone else who might like the show or might benefit from it, please tell them, please share it with them, please share the link to our website, engagingic.com. And that would be great, because we want to grow our community. We want to get as many people involved in the show as possible. And we, the bigger, the better. Okay, thank you.